Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca Mesut Özil.
Al segundo intento, qué volea, qué golazo. Con la pierna izquierda, Mesut Özil. Te puede enamorar. 1-0, tanto de Özil.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly evening to you. It's Sunday evening.
It's Sunday evening. Goodly evening indeed.
Yeah.
It's nice. I like the evening ones. You know, I feel like I'm more awake for one, which helps.
Yeah.
And there's just something relaxing. You know, you can do it with a drink.
Yes, I've got a drink. What have you got?
I've got a glass of wine.
So do I.
Very civilized.
Yeah.
Really? Which color?
It's red. It's from South Africa. It's delicious. So yeah, here we are. We should be nice and chilled out throughout this particular episode. So that's good for everyone who's listening, thinking that it could get crazy and mental. It's probably not going to happen like that.
No, that's it. But it's nice to be chilled out. Unusual for Arsenal fans, really. We should embrace it while we can.
I think so. It's a good position. It's a good default position to be chilled out. I know they don't make it easy for us, but you know, look, here we are. It's coming up towards Christmas. We should be as chilled out as we can be, even if the team doesn't make it easy. But, you know, I'm here. I'm here. You're here. I don't have a puppy, but there you go.
You don't, but you did. I mean, you know, you said it's a goodly evening. It looks like it's been a very goodly day, judging by the picture of the puppy I saw on your Twitter account.
Oh, yeah. It's on my Instagram, actually. If anyone wants to look, it's on Instagram.com/arseblog. So, look, we were in town doing a bit of Christmas shopping, as you do, just wandering around, soaking up the rain, no, a little bit of the Christmas atmosphere, but we had to do some shopping and do a few bits and pieces and went for a pint in a bar that we go to on a regular basis. And we were sitting there having a pint and this guy came in and he had this amazingly gorgeous little 4-month-old pit bull puppy called Chieftain. We discovered he was called Chieftain. And he was a really friendly little dog. He was going around, just going up to people and wagging his tail and then jumping up on the seats beside them and licking their faces. And, you know, we had a squeeze. You know, when a puppy comes into a pub, it's one of the best things ever, right? Like, there's not much better than that.
Well, everything stops in the pub. All the attention immediately goes on the puppy.
Pretty much.
As it should be.
Pretty much. So it was like that. So the guy had a drink. He was sitting beside us. The puppy was sort of scrambling around, doing puppy things, and we were having a rub and what have you. And the guy then has his drink, finishes up, leaves the pub, and we're going, oh, goodbye, puppy. It's been so lovely to meet you. You're such a great puppy. Dude leaves the pub. We're sitting there going, oh, God, like, you know, puppies are great. I'd love another puppy. And we, you know, we're talking about maybe getting another dog at some point in the new year. Oh, God, puppies, though, they're so great. They're just amazing. Yeah. So then the guy comes back into the pub.
Right.
And hands us the puppy. And he says, would you mind him? I've just got to go and get a haircut. And there's a place right beside here. I just want to get a haircut. Would you look after him for a few minutes? And we were like, of course. Why wouldn't we want to, like, look after a little puppy for a few minutes? He's gorgeous.
This is
amazing. So he leaves us with the puppy. And the guy who is behind the bar comes over. He goes, oh, yeah, what's going on? I said, oh, he's just going to get a haircut. And he says, oh, look, he's left his dog food behind as well. He'd left a bag of dog food on the seat beside us where we were sitting beside us. And we were like, oh, do you think maybe, do you think he's gone? Like, do you think he's left and he's just decided that we're nice people to leave a puppy with? Because I'd said to him, oh, yeah, we've got a dog. We've got a German Shepherd and he's, you know, he's grey, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think maybe he's, like, gone?
He's absconded.
Yeah, he just was, like, looking for someone to take in his puppy. He couldn't deal with the puppy anymore and he had to find nice new owners for the puppy and maybe we fit the bill. You know, it's a bit weird, isn't it? Going to get a haircut at 5:25 on a Sunday Is that, yeah. And he left the dog food behind as well. Is that so we could like have something to feed the dog?
Oh. At that point, are you happy or sad?
Well, yeah, I'm mixed. I'm in the middle. I've sort of got a mix of emotions here. One is that like, oh, this puppy, I've got a puppy beside me and he's lovely. And he started to fall asleep then. He was so sweet and I was just rubbing him. His eyes were closed and he was just like little puppy paws and everything. And his little puppy, silky puppy ears. And I was like, yeah, but at the same time, I'm not sure I need a new puppy right now because, you know, I've got a lot going on. It's coming up to Christmas. There's a lot of work going on. Like, my dad has been in hospital. He's coming out tomorrow. And, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff just going on. And then how do you bring a four-month-old pit bull back to your house and say, here, five-year-old German Shepherd, you know, here's your new brother.
Yeah. So there's a task of integration to be done there.
There is. So there was part of me that was going, oh, God. The big part of me was hoping that the guy would come back, right? And pick up his dog, and we would just have this beautiful moment, 5 minutes with the dog. That would be amazing. Or whatever it was. It was about 15, 20 minutes. And then we started to get really anxious, like the guy hadn't come back. So I was like, oh, right. Will I go up and just see, is he in the barbers? Okay, I went up and... had a look, and there was just one guy there, an old guy getting his head shaved. And I was like,
no way.
And then I just looked a little bit closer, and the dude was up the top end of the barbershop, and he was just, you know, finishing off getting his haircut. So I was like, phew, thank goodness for that. And then he came back in.
So he was legit.
Yeah, he was legit. He just like trusted two people to mind his puppy, and we minded his puppy, and he came back and picked it up, and it was a beautiful thing. And it's the best thing. Like, he gets to go home with his puppy. The puppy gets to go home with his owner. And I don't need a new puppy right at this moment in time. But there is part of me that's just a little bit sad that I don't have a puppy right now.
I understand that.
Yeah.
A puppy is for life, ideally not for this Christmas. Yes. That's your policy on puppies.
Exactly. And he was such a little, lovely little dog as well. But it was nice to have a little moment or a few minutes with a puppy and then sort of hand him back and you don't have any of the responsibility. But there was a moment there where we were going, are we morons? Have we been suckered by this guy?
I guess it's a bit like when we loaned Kim Chalstrom. You know, we didn't have any responsibility. We just enjoyed him for a little period of time and then sent him on his way.
Poor old Kim Chalstrom. He's retired now. He retired this week, it seems.
I know. Yeah. Maybe that's why he's on my mind. Apparently he spoke about his penalty against Wigan in the semi-final as the greatest 15 minutes of his life.
Yeah, he did this amazing radio essay, I think in Sweden for Swedish radio. And this dude on Reddit, he translated the whole thing. We have it on Arsblog News. People can go and look at it. Just search for Kim Kallstrom on Arsblog News and you'll find this. And it's an amazing story about how much that penalty meant to him and how much it meant to just his career in terms of, you know, obviously the circumstances of his arrival at Arsenal were strange, it's fair to say.
Of course. Yeah, bizarre in the extreme. But, you know, nice that he had that moment, much like you had your little moment in the pub today with, what was his name? Captain? Skipper? Chieftain.
Chieftain. Yeah, I was renaming him and everything. I had a new name for him. I was going to call him Arnold. I was going to bring him home and call him Arnold.
you'd rebranded.
Yeah, I'd gone that far. I had it. It was like, this is not ideal. This is a bad situation. I do not need a puppy. But also, yes! I've got a puppy. Free puppy out of nowhere. This is amazing. But there you go. So that was my late afternoon, early evening. So now I'm talking to you. And I'm not saying it's worse, James. I'm not saying it's any worse.
This is the come down, you're saying.
Yeah. But here we are. So look, should we talk about Arsenal? I think we should.
Yeah, let's do that. I mean, the puppy sounds probably more fun than the game. Is that fair to say?
Yes. The puppy was, you know, he was playing with a rope and it was nonstop fun and then he fell asleep and then it was just rubbing the puppy and then it wasn't 90 minutes of, well, in fairness, it wasn't 90 minutes of badness or anything. It was just like, we're in a strange place at the moment, aren't we, in terms of how we play and what we do. And, you know, we score that goal after about 20 minutes, 25 minutes of the first half. I was sitting there. There was a point probably about 15, 20 minutes in where I was going, oh, you know, if I think an early goal would have been ideal for us because it would have lifted some of the nerves, you know, about not scoring. You know, we're heading towards that thing where we don't score until halftime and then you hope we come out and we do better in the second half and we don't get a goal. It's like 70 minutes and you're like, oh, what's going to happen here? And then we score that goal. And I thought we played some okay stuff, actually, in that first half. I thought we played pretty well. But gosh, the second half was just like, this is a team that is not confident in any way about anything that it's doing, really, is it?
That's it. It's a pretty amazing. I mean, you're probably listening to this on Monday, the 18th of December. That marks 1 month since we confidently beat Tottenham 2-0, our local rivals. And we did it in such a controlled, I mean, confident is the only word, a confident fashion. And that confidence has evaporated. I mean, we looked like we were really walking into trouble in that second half. And by the end, it felt like we were clinging on a little bit.
Yeah, it always seems to happen, doesn't it? You got that one goal lead and then there's the nervousness that kicks in and, you know, nobody wants to make a mistake or overcommit going forward. But, you know, I think I can't remember who I saw say this on Twitter, that this team doesn't believe that it can defend well enough to just sit back and defend and stay organized. So they think they have to go for a second goal to make the game safe. And by doing so, they obviously make things a bit more precarious. But look, let's start with the team selection. Arsene Wenger made one change from the team that drew with West Ham, and it was Alexandre Lacazette in for Olivier Giroud. Now, that wasn't a surprise to me. I thought Lacazette was going to start. In for Giroud is the obvious change. I didn't think he was going to change Alexis. I didn't think he was going to change Ozil. I thought he might do something with midfield. He didn't. But he also kept Ainsley Maitland-Niles at left back. He did well again. He did well again. I'm just struggling to see what the thinking is here exactly.
Both
from the point of view of like Maitland-Niles and also the point of view of the squad in general. I mean, do we have to assume that Kolasinac has got some kind of injury or is it just form?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing to... That was one potential explanation. But even then, you know, you could always play Nacho Monreal at left back in the position where he's played for the vast majority of his career. You've got other centre-halves available who could come in alongside Koscielny. So it feels very deliberate, the inclusion of Maitland-Niles. It was one of those things that when I saw it at West Ham, in fact, the whole lineup against West Ham felt a little bit like a midweek game where Arsenal had rotated and, you know, there were some surprising selections for me. The fact that he sticks with the vast majority of it was even more of a surprise. And yeah, look, there's no doubt Maitland-Niles did well in both games. Maybe there was a slight element of Arsenal thinking, well, look, I brought a young guy in, I've given him his chance, he's taken it. Maybe I have to reward that to an extent and give him the start in the home game.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. Yeah, it could well be that. But, you know, you've got to think that Maitland-Niles at left back can only be a temporary situation. It can't be where he's going to play on a regular basis. It can't be good for the team to have a player playing out of position on a regular basis as well, because as well as he's done, there's going to come a point where, you know, he hits some kind of a wall or a plateau in terms of his development. And that's difficult enough to deal with when you're playing in your normal position. But when you're playing out of position, and I know he's played left wing back for the vast majority of this season in terms of the Europa League and the Carabao Cup, but that's not where he belongs, really. So it's hard to get your head around it. It could well be just a case that he wanted to reward his good performance against West Ham. And I thought he was good again. He was good again. He had some, there was one run and shot in the first half, which was really excellent. But I just wonder if you upset the balance of the team too much by having players out of position. You've got a right-footed player at left back, trying to dovetail with Alexis Sanchez, which is difficult enough at the best of times for a specialist in that position. And, you know, it was tough, I think, for him to get involved when he got further forward, because Alexis is who he is. He's an individualist when it comes to what happens in the final third.
Yeah. I mean, Arsene Wenger spoke in very glowing terms about Maitland-Niles before and after the game. And what he said afterwards was, he said, well, Maitland-Niles is comfortable in three positions. He can play right back or, well, more than three, right back or right wing back, centre midfield or left back or left wing back. And he actually said of those three areas of the pitch, the left-hand side is the one where he's the least comfortable. So I thought that was telling. He didn't speak about it as, yeah, I think he's found his role now and he's a left back from this point on. I think he is kind of a guy doing a job there, albeit a good one. Mm. But if you look back at the history of Arsenal's teams, he's never really been one who's gone for inverted fullbacks, like your right-footed left-back. It's only been in emergencies. I remember William Gallas actually did it when he first joined for a few games. And we've seen Sanya play there like once or twice. But it's not something he tends to do. And it's an interesting one. The Kolasinac one, I mean, there hasn't been anything public about an injury.
No, there hasn't. I mean, do you think maybe it's a way of him putting Maitland-Niles into the team in a Premier League environment? Because he's played Europa League and he's played Carabao Cup, and we know that the pressure and the expectation in terms of those games is very different when it comes to Premier League. Do you think it's a way of maybe putting him in there to see, okay, how does he cope? How is he gonna really cope when he's asked to do a job at the very highest level, which the Premier League is? Now, granted, the opposition, West Ham and Newcastle, are not the best that you will face, but it's perhaps a way of seeing, how does he cope? Is he overawed? Can he play his normal game? You know, will he shrink in the spotlight? And I think the answer to that is no. And then perhaps we might see a situation where he can use him in midfield, where he belongs, where Maybe. He said he belongs. So,
yeah. I mean, he's certainly on record. Arsene Wenger saying that will be his best position in the future. I mean, it's interesting because it's one he's come to relatively recently. It's not like Maitland-Niles' whole development as a kid was as a central midfielder. He played on the wings, you know, when he went on loan to Ipswich, he played as a winger and he plays a fullback too. But Arsene's always talked about him as a holding midfield player, and that's what he's been doing in the last year or so. I think if it is a test of his character or his composure in those pressurised situations, I think he's really come through it really well. And on a day that was, you know, we got the 3 points, but there wasn't much to shout about in the broader performance, I thought he was really one of the big positives.
Yeah, I agree. Mesut Ozil's goal was the other big positive of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, just a brilliant, brilliant strike. It's an interesting goal when you look at it as well. We have Wilshere bursting through from midfield, playing it to Iwobi, who squares it into the box, comes across to Alexis. And you know, what would have been easy for Alexis is to see his shot blocked and to stand there and see where the ball was going to end up. But he actually played a part in the goal itself because he contested the header. And I think that's a slightly underlooked part of that goal. Like 95% of it, of course, is Ozil, the technique, the brilliance to be able to watch the ball to, I guess, estimate where it might come down. You look at the way he moves while the ball is in the air. He's sort of predicting where it might land, and the technique to hit the ball back up over and into the net is just superb. But if that guy, if that defender has that header uncontested, he gets it further than the ball traveled, you know? So Alexis played a part in contesting the header and making sure that the ball didn't go, you know, further away into to a safer area.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, he did well to at least make a contest of it and force the defender into what is, you know, a clearance, yes, but essentially a concession of possession. If Alexis doesn't do that, defender can nod it back to his keeper. He might as well, you know, given the lack of pressure. But I was struck by something you mentioned there, which was the way in which Ozil anticipated where the ball would drop. I mean, it was absolutely uncanny. As he saw Alexis going for it, he kind of read, look, I don't think he's going to get there. I think the defender's going to be forced to make a header. And so he kind of calculated it. It was like Neo in the Matrix or something. He anticipated it and he a little bit of a footwork, and he was in the right position because, you know, if he's sort of on the move trying to get to that ball when it's dropping, it's a very different thing. But being in the right place afforded him the time and the space to execute that volley as well as he did. The strike was amazing, but there was forethought to it that I thought was pretty special.
Yeah, it was a superb goal, really was. And the kind of goal that deserves to win a game. Of course, you would prefer that we might use that goal as a platform to score a couple more, but it just didn't happen, did it? There were chances. I think the Lacazette chance where he was played through by Iwobi and decided to go for a chip to the far post, a very, very difficult skill. If you pull it off, it looks amazing. It looks brilliant, but you know, it's so difficult compared to the other option, which was for a striker of his quality, for a guy who hits the ball as cleanly as he does, is to just put your foot through it and hit it across goal and see what happens. And I think you've got a much, much better chance of scoring there. I think that was a decision he got really wrong.
Yeah, I thought in the first half, good moments, Lacazette, there were a couple of nice touches on the edge of the box. I think that's something we're seeing more from him, you know, the ability to kind of play in neat 1-2s. Not quite to the same extent that Giroud does it, but, you know, little touches off to the likes of Ozil and Sanchez. But I did think, and this is judging him by a high standard, because his finishing has been excellent, really, for the majority of the season. But I did think that maybe there wasn't quite the same... Just, I suppose, level of composure or accuracy about him in the final third as there has been on other days. I can think of that chipped effort where I think he got the decision wrong. There was another one where he produced a lovely bit of footwork and a spin and fizzed a shot. But I mean, it was a decent enough effort, but there were other options available to him at that time. And maybe he just felt like, having been left out in the week, he was kind of determined to make an impact. And for someone who's normally so ice cold in those situations, maybe that played on his mind a little bit. I thought he was okay, but it was one of those games where when he came off, I understood it much more than I had done in certain other matches.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I mean, I think on you know, on the basis of his performance overall, I don't think there was much to be unhappy about him coming off, even if there's part of me that wants to see what happens in the final 15, 20 minutes of games, particularly when we're playing a side like Newcastle, who had to try and come forward a bit to get something from the game. Yeah. They had to. And then, of course, you've got the ability to break, and he is that kind of a finisher. I'd like to see what he can do in those situations. But yeah, look, in general, I don't think on the basis of his performance, he was so great that you could say taking him off was wrong. But it just feels as well a bit like the substitutions are prescribed. Like, let me put it to you like this. If you're taking Lacazette off, why don't you play Danny Welbeck? Why don't you put Welbeck on instead of Lacazette and play him up front? Whereas Giroud for Lacazette is just like, it's boring now. And it just feels like, oh, this is what he wanted to do throughout, you know, even before he started the game. The plan is to give Lacazette 70 minutes and then put Giroud on, regardless of what's happening or the context of the game or anything else.
I know what you mean. And actually, I think Danny Welbeck could really do with a little bit of time at centre forward. He's being put out on that right wing, and he looks very short of confidence to me. He looks a long way from the player we saw at the start of the season, when people were talking about, you know, having him in the side ahead of Alexis Sanchez, ahead of Mesut Ozil, and he had some excellent games. Right now, I think he looks a long way from that sort of form, and maybe playing through the middle might be what's required to spark a bit of life into him. Mm. Certainly, if you're going to take Lacazette off, Welbeck's a far more analogous player, isn't he, than Giroud? I mean, he doesn't force a complete change of style in the way that Giroud does.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not to be critical of Giroud, because he's not the one making those decisions, nor is he the one... Well, I mean, obviously, the way he plays affects the way that the team plays, because it's a different kind of system. But, yeah.
Yeah, I really think that the January transfer window is a factor in this, and that... You know, when you look at the treatment of Olivier Giroud and you look at the treatment of Walcott, I think you can infer certain things about maybe what Arsenal's strategy will be in terms of selling players in January, because Giroud's been included more regularly. He started his first Premier League game now that we're into December. He started making noise in the press about maybe thinking about a move. And I honestly think that will probably get him more minutes. Whereas to Theo, who didn't even make the bench at the weekend, I think the message is,
well, he is injured. In fairness, he did talk about Walcott having a small groin strain, you know, small, I don't quite know. He said he could be involved against West Ham on Tuesday night, but yeah, it feels a bit like Walcott is just completely marginalized by the depth of the squad as Arsene Wenger sees it. And yeah, you could be right. I would just like to see Lacazette given a bit more time in the final stages of games, because that is a time when you can take advantage of tiring defenses. On the other hand, you know, having had that groin scare the other week, this is his first season in English football. It's also heading into a period where there's a lot of football to play. There's a lot of games. Much more football to play than he would be used to at this time of year in France. Whether it's Arsene Wenger protecting him to a certain extent in terms of his physicality, that he doesn't want him to pick up an injury, it could be that as well. But it could be all of those things. It could be all of those things where that also gives the manager a bit of a get out when it comes to his team selections.
Yeah, it could be part of it as well. I mean, Lacazette, there were reports, weren't there, that he was pretty frustrated when he came off. I didn't see it myself, but apparently on the television coverage, they said that he kind of threw his gloves and his jacket down in dramatic fashion. I mean, have you seen any confirmation of that anywhere?
I saw people talk about it on Twitter, but he could be just pissed off that he didn't score. You know, maybe not the substitution itself. It's too easy to have a narrative and fit the events to it, you know? Maybe he is pissed off. I would be surprised if he wasn't pissed off at being taken off all the time. Like, I would be unhappy with Lacazette if he was happy being substituted. So I don't really see it as a big issue, though. I mean, the answer to that is score some goals. Score goals and you won't get taken off, you know? That's the reality of that situation where you will be judged on your performances. A day when, you know, you fluff a couple of good chances and you get taken off is not a day where I think you can complain about being taken off. If you've scored and if the team needs a goal and you've been taken off and you're the club record signing and a top striker, then you're being taken off. Yeah, fair enough. I get it. But I'm not sure that was really applicable on Saturday. So as the game went on, Giroud came on and I know he set up a chance for Jack Wilshere. Welbeck came on, didn't do a great deal, to be honest. He's finding it very hard to make any kind of impact being shunted out on the right-hand side. And then we got a bit nervous, didn't we? We got nervous towards the end of the game. There were moments when Newcastle looked dangerous and threatening where we kind of switched off a bit defensively. We weren't quite as sharp as we should have been. And they did have a couple of chances. Petacek had to make a save or two. And there was one, I think, there was a header that went wide late on where the guy, if he got it on target, there was no way Cech was getting anywhere near it.
No, I mean, he'd really given up the ghost there, Cech. I mean, he would have had absolutely no chance, and it flew just wide. And it was nervy. It was nervy at the Emirates. And to be honest, actually, I was surprised. Quite a lot of fans had left the stadium by the full-time whistle, and I was thinking, I mean, it's not a game I would have left with any certainty of the final score. Maybe they were feeling a bit nervous about it, because it was tense. I mean, without wishing to scapegoat, I did feel like in that period there were some really needless concessions of possession, particularly from Granit Xhaka. It's so bizarre. I mean, the guy's such an adept passer of the ball at times. I was thinking earlier in the game, he played one pass, and I thought, it's rare you see a player who passes the ball with kind of every part of their foot. Like, he can, he's like a golf player almost, and he can use that left foot like as an assortment of different clubs to get the right trajectory. He can make the ball like stop on a dime. He can do so much stuff that is incredibly impressive. But there are times where, I don't know if it's focus or decision making, it just feels like his head goes a little
Sometimes he doesn't see what's going on. Like, he makes passes across field without having full view of what's there. That they get intercepted quite a bit, don't they? So it's like people are reading what he's going to do. Maybe he's easy to read as a footballer. You know, the minute he shapes his body, the opposition players know what he's going to do. But there's an element of carelessness and sloppiness to it as well. It's not just that, where you can see that he doesn't quite have the full concentration, the full focus. He knows what he wants to do, but he doesn't know what the consequences of what doing that are in that context. And there was one late on, I think, where the ball came across him and he played it first time, looking to move it out right, move it out quickly, thinking that it would be all open. And the guy intercepted. I think he had to make a foul and take a yellow card, which is fine. I'm all right with that. But, you know, he does look like he's struggling. I don't think he's quite as bad as people are saying, but those concessions of possession at that stage of the game can be really costly.
Yeah, I think what it is that, you know, rightly or wrongly, people are still categorising him as a kind of holding midfield player. And historically in Arsenal teams, that the most successful Arsenal teams at any rate, that has been the guy who you can almost rely on most for sort of game management. If you think about someone like Gilberto Silva, like, he wasn't necessarily the most technically gifted footballer you've ever seen. He couldn't pass the ball in quite the way Xhaka does, but his tactical intelligence was second to none. He had an intuitive understanding of the strategic element of the game. And with Xhaka, you would almost sacrifice some of that technique for just a little bit more of that game management ability, because that's an area of the field where that is so, so important. And I do think that you know, there are times when Shaka and Ramsey has worked, but I still think that if you're really going to see the best of him, then when you look at that central midfield area and if potentially you look at a three, there is maybe a different kind of player, whether it's Maitland-Niles or somebody else, who would allow him to function a little bit better than he does right now.
It doesn't feel balanced to me. That midfield three, you know, when you look at how we played on Saturday, particularly at the start of the game, with Mesut Ozil sitting probably the deepest.
Yeah, what did you make of that? I thought it was the deepest I've ever seen him play for us.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, isn't it? Because obviously he is a guy who creates. He's got the vision and the creativity and the ability to pick a pass in the final third. And I don't really understand what he was being asked to do by playing as deep as he did. I think there was one of those graphics, you know, the average pass graphics where he and Wilshere were more or less in the same position when it comes to the average pass, and sort of generally speaking at the tip of, if you imagine a midfield triangle, that's kind of where the two of them were, where they ended up, or where they ended up playing most of their passes from. But yeah, very early on, he was sitting really, really deep, and I didn't quite understand what was happening there, and I didn't understand what he was being asked to do. And I don't think that three works together as well as it should. I just don't think the three left-footed players are as balanced as they could be, because I feel like we don't have the passing angles that we should. You need a right-footed player in there. And I know somebody would say, well, if you have three right-footed players in central midfield, nobody will be talking about it. I get that. But when you look at the three left-footed players we have, Ozil, Xhaka, and Jack Wilshere are three really, really left-footed players.
I mean, they don't kick the ball with the right foot, especially Xhaka and Wilshere.
They rarely touch the ball with their right foot. It's for standing on. So all of a sudden, you've got one side of the pitch kind of closed off, or if you're going to that side of the pitch, you've got to shift, and you've got to make a turn. You've got to position your body in a way that's not necessarily natural. So I think the balance is wrong there, which is why I thought it might be an interesting idea to play Maitland-Niles in that midfield position. If that's what if you're going to play that three, and if you want to give Maitland-Niles some game time, you know, we've seen what Coquelin can do, we've seen what Elneny can do. That's fine. Arsene Wenger doesn't seem that convinced by it at Premier League level. He's happy to play them in the Carabao Cup and the Europa League, but at Premier League level, it's clear that he does not want to use those two players if he can help it. Right? They're not in the team. So if you're gonna try and balance your midfield, maybe do it that way. You know, I don't know what was going on or what the thinking was. I'm not sure it works as well as it should, and I think that contributed in general to a game where we didn't get on top as much as we should have.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I hear what you're saying about the pass map, and you're right that, you know, Ozil did push on and play more advanced, certainly, than Xhaka. But I think often the best way to look at how the team have been told to set up is what they do, you know, what they do when the ball goes out of play, when there's a goal kick, when they return to their starting roles. And Ozil was sometimes taking the ball right off the back four, like really, really deep in his own half.
Almost like Cazorla used to when Cazorla was playing in that central midfield role.
Yeah, well, I mean, is that the logic? Is that what was going on? Because it was Arsene thinking, I need to find somebody who can give us that technical security at that end of the pitch?
I don't know. But he ended up playing sort of further forward as the game went on.
The last 20 minutes, yeah, they sort of switched. And the other thing is this more about Jack Wilshere than it is about Mesut Ozil? I mean, is it just a question that for the vast majority of the game, Arsene felt more comfortable with Wilshere playing in a number 10 and away from that part of the field than he did with Ozil? But it was odd how they did switch later on. I almost felt like that was maybe a question of Jack's legs not quite being there, you know, whereas Ozil, he gives you a constant threat on the break because his stamina is so good.
To be fair to Wilshere, he did, you know, he's done 90 minutes twice in 3 or 4 days and he looked okay, and physically he was all right. I mean, I don't think, you know, the performances against West Ham and Newcastle have been absolutely fine. Nothing to write home about. But, you know, if it's about finding out whether he's got the legs or the stamina to do it in the Premier League, I think we've got, you know, some kind of an answer to that question. How long you can ask him to do it for without putting him in danger of injury, I don't quite know. But I think he's answered a couple of questions in terms of his physical capabilities. And that's got to be one of the key issues when it comes to his contract.
Yeah. That's very fair. I mean, I think I would never have anticipated to be honest, at any point this season that he'd play 290 minutes in the space of three days. And I was almost actually pretty surprised when the final substitute went off and it was Alexis Sanchez, wasn't it, rather than Jack Wilshere. It was the 89th minute or so, but I thought, you know, surely they're going to give Wilshere a break. But no, I think he's done okay in that respect. He wasn't fantastic against Newcastle, but in the first half, he had a few decent moments.
But look, 3 points is what we needed. We needed to get 3 points.
We needed it badly.
Yeah, we did. We got it. We got there in the end. Another clean sheet. That's 10 clean sheets for Petr Cech so far this season. So while our defending and defensive record has not been great, that's a reasonable record. I do think, actually, Cech is one of the... Not that he's underrated or underappreciated, but I just think his contribution has been perhaps overlooked because we've been unhappy with a lot of stuff that's been going on. He has been making good saves. He's been dominating his area. He's been coming out and sweeping. Yeah, I don't think you can really put too many of the goals that we've conceded down to him at all. They've been defensive issues. So I think that in some ways is a positive. We've obviously got a game tomorrow night in the Carabao Cup or on Tuesday night in the Carabao Cup. Team selection there will be interesting. Maitland-Niles is a guy who you would expect to play in that game. Whether he plays or not.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it depends if he's counted as a first team player. I would say, given that we played Saturday and that we play Friday, of course, against Liverpool, I think I'd be very surprised if any of the players who will start against Liverpool were involved on Tuesday.
Yeah. It's going to be a big rotation, isn't it?
But with two clean sheets behind Maitland-Niles in the back four, I don't know. Maybe Arsene Wenger will stick with him.
I think it would be very brave to play him at left back against Liverpool.
It's a hell of a test, that Liverpool attack, isn't it?
I mean, really is.
Look who their right winger is, Mohamed Salah, probably the informed player in the country.
I mean, is it even fair to pick him there? You know, to thrust him into that kind of a situation where he's having to deal with probably the best player in the Premier League so far this season and playing out of position, and he's got youthful enthusiasm and exuberance and physicality and speed and all that. But, you know, it's sometimes easy.
Is there a kind of crazy theory that Arsene Wenger has looked ahead before the West Ham game? He's looked at Mo Salah and thought, this is a guy who is incredibly quick, who plays from the right-hand side, whose tendency is to cut into his left every single time. I've got a young guy, right-footed, can play left-back, incredibly quick. Yeah. If I can give him 2 games, he could be the perfect Salah antidote.
I love that your mind went there, but the idea that this was some part of long-term thinking or strategic thinking on Arsene Wenger's part, I think, is fanciful, to be honest.
but then how do you cope with him? I mean,
well, that's it.
I know it's sort of a subject for another day, but I mean, you know, we've seen Monreal given a tough time with some quick wingers.
Well, yeah, but what if you play an actual back four with a left back? You can keep Monreal, you can put Kolasinac in there. And, you know, where do you get your cover from? You get your defensive cover when you're playing with a back four from the deep-lying midfielder, right? So that could be if you're playing, whether it's a midfield two or even just one guy who's sitting. But that midfielder could be the guy who tucks in and provides defensive cover and stability. So Maitland-Niles, in that sense, all those qualities you talked about, his pace, his recovery runs, as Arsene Wenger talked about, his physicality, maybe he's the guy who could come in and do a job in that sense. You know, is Maitland-Niles going to get bumped off the ball by Hazard the way that Coquelin was, for example? I don't know. But, you know, that could be one way of coping with what Salah has to offer. I don't know. We'll have to see. I mean, he's obviously got a big decision to make. I just think that playing a kid there, and he is a kid, and he's coming into the team, and he's sensing that he's got a chance, and he's performed really well. But, you know, we've seen young players come into the team and do well for 2 or 3 games in an unnatural position. But after a while, you start to get found out. You start to get exposed. It becomes more difficult. And I do wonder if that will be on the manager's mind.
Maybe. Just get our quickest player. Play Theo Walcott left back. Tell him, stay with Salah. But yeah, he's been saving him.
Yeah,
he's been saving him for that.
He's been well known for his defensive concentration, Theo, of course. So.
So what do you expect to see against West Ham then? All change?
Yeah, all change. I would be very surprised to see anybody who played against... who did we just play? Newcastle. Yeah, sorry. I would be very surprised. I think it's going to be a young bench as well. I think we'll see, you know, the likes of Nketiah, Ben Sheaf, Josh De Silva. These guys, I think, will be the bench. So whoever he puts out against West Ham, if we're talking about starting, I mean, I think, you know, there's a case for starting Danny Welbeck, case for starting Giroud, Coquelin, Elneny, Reece Nelson, Debuchy, Holding, Chambers, Mertesacker. It depends what formation he's going to play. What sort of, a, you know, is he going to play a back four against West Ham on Tuesday as well? It feels to me like he's gone back to the back four. Mm-hmm. I think this is it now, but, you know, we'll wait and see. But yeah, all change, and then we'll see what happens there. And then, of course, Friday is a much different kettle of fish. You know, they're obviously scoring goals for fun, and it's a frightening proposition at the moment because we're not. Yeah. Okay. No. Well, look, will we take a break here?
Let's do that.
Do you remember last week where you did a really long like when you went?
Yes, I do that.
Yeah, you remember that? Yeah, I remember that. I made a grime remix of it, so I'll play that and then we'll come back in part two with your questions right after this.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thearsblog. James, you're rabies free, which is good. This is good. Something's happening. What is happening here? My phone is ringing. No, I'm not going to answer it.
Okay, can't do it. Good.
That's fine.
It could be about my rabies jabs.
Yeah.
We did it wrong. We've given him rabies.
Yeah. Just so people know, I suppose we should prepare them. You're not going to be here at all in January. You're going to be gone.
That's it.
Gone.
The transfer window. Exactly.
For the entire... you sneaky Sanchez. Fucker. You sneaky bastard. You're gone for the whole transfer window.
I'm away in Sri Lanka and India. But I've... I'm having to be immunized against a bunch of stuff at the moment, because let's face it, if anyone is going to catch something, it's going to be me, right?
For sure. You're going to catch everything, I think.
I think, yeah, there's only so much that these jabs can do. I mean, I'll still, I don't know, fall off a cliff or something.
Mm. Yeah. Do they have many cliffs in India and Sri Lanka? I mean, they probably do.
I don't know. They've got mountains. They probably have cliffs on. I'll find a way to hurt myself.
You will. But just so people know, the Arsecast Extra will be continuing, just with a different guest presenter every week until James gets back, whenever he's sort of medevaced back to the UK.
Probably after about a week, I should think.
All I can think of now is that episode of The Simpsons where Homer tries to jump the gorge on his skateboard and thinks he's going to make it, and then gets, you know, bumped all the way down, and they take him up in the stretcher, and then they drop the stretcher all the way down. He gets even worse. But yeah, hopefully that doesn't happen to you.
Hopefully, but it feels very, very, very plausible indeed.
I'm going to start with the questions, all right?
Oh, go on.
This one comes from Ross Cowan, who's on Facebook. And he says, if the Ox plays against us on Friday, do you think the crowd will be giving him abuse? And if he scores, should he celebrate? Personally, I celebrate when I score against my 7-year-old son, even though it reduces him to tears. So I don't see the problem. Also, he did try when he played for us, but it just didn't work out. And he could have had more money if he went to Chelsea, but chose Liverpool to play midfield instead of winger. So I think we should show respect. What do you think about that from Ross Cowan?
He celebrates against his 7-year-old son.
Yeah, it reduces his child to tears.
I'm not sure if that's good parenting. I don't have children, so I don't know. But
well then, yeah, you're in no position to judge.
Yeah, I can't judge. Okay, fair enough. Maybe his son's a Spurs fan. We don't know.
You've got to teach them the harsh lessons of life, James.
They have to learn touched to on lose. This.
Exactly. You have to learn that not everything is going to work out for you, and that sometimes good your point. Dad is a prick. Sorry, Ross, I'm joking.
I'm sure the 7-year-old doesn't listen, so it's fine. He'll never know. He'll find out in due course. The thing is, my instinct says that he might be booed, because I feel like in modern football, everyone gets booed. I feel like, you know, you leave the club, you get booed. Is that fair?
Yeah, that seems to be what happens. And do you think what kind of happened towards the end of the transfer window and like his, look, he was shite at Anfield, like absolutely shite. There's no question that he was rubbish. But that really didn't set him apart from any of the other Arsenal players on that day.
No, but I guess it was unfortunate in the context, right? The fact that he, within about 48 hours of that, turned down and moved to Chelsea to join Liverpool.
Who do we put at fault here, though?
Like, the manager, beyond any doubt.
It's a difficult situation to be in, isn't it? That, you know, for a player, he probably knew fine well that he was going to be joining Liverpool. He knew he was going to join Liverpool before the end of the window. And then he's being asked to play against them. And, yeah, look, I think, you know, whatever happened that day at Anfield, you can point fingers at players all you like, but it was down to how we were being managed that situation was as tempestuous as it was, I think.
I don't think he's particularly deserving of booing. I mean, he seems like a nice enough guy. I don't think anyone ever accused him of not working hard in his time at Arsenal, not trying. It just didn't quite click. And I think, he didn't go to Chelsea, which is something, you know. Those guys never get a good reception. So I think he probably deserves, you know, a smattering of polite applause, but I don't think that's what will happen.
Mm. He won't get any polite applause. He will be the pantomime villain. And on a Friday night, when people are coming from work, they've had a few pints and a few beers going to the game, I don't see any problem with that. I don't really have any ill will whatsoever towards Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I think he tried his best when he played for us. His best wasn't good enough more often than not. You know, he had some nice moments, but he was just a guy who never really reach the potential that we thought he might have. And if he reaches it at Liverpool, well, fine. But, you know, I don't see him as some kind of hate figure. He was a good guy. He was popular around the club. He did what he had to do. He was, you know, he was always involved in the social media video bants that they had, and he was quite good at all that. And he seems like a nice kid, really. So he will get booed. He will be the pantomime villain. Does he deserve it? No, but you know, it is what it is. And I don't think anybody should get their knickers in a twist about it one way or the other.
No, and I think by the same token, I think he's perfectly entitled to celebrate.
Yeah.
If he does score.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, I think that's fine. I'm happy enough with that. I don't really have a... it wouldn't offend me if a player who used to play for us scored against us and then celebrated. There were a couple where I thought, that's all right. I think when Eduardo scored against us, he didn't celebrate. And everyone went, oh, Eduardo. But it was like the consolation goal in a 5-1 defeat for his team. So he wasn't going to start running around. But, you know, I think that would have been okay just because of the context of his Arsenal career. But if the club decides that you're expendable and they'll take £40 million for you, then why shouldn't you? You know, you can still celebrate and still have respect for a club and the fans and the staff and everything else. People just get far too offended by things like this. They take it very personally. That's, oh, what an absolute cunt, you know. Well, what's he supposed to do? He just scored a goal. Scoring a goal is great. And when you're Oxlade-Chamberlain, you don't score that often. So, you know, why not? He's going to score now, isn't he? Definitely.
I mean, I imagine everyone on that Liverpool team will score at some point in that game. but I think, I think he's entitled to celebrate. I don't think he deserves booing, but I think we're entitled to boo. That is part of the pantomime of football, isn't it? And that's part of what makes it entertaining.
Yep.
So nothing to get too upset about there. Right, this question, we might have had this question before, but it's a fun one, so I'm going to do it anyway. Beardy McBeardface, who's at Bearded Hannon on Twitter.
Yep. Does he have Beardy a beard? Asks, does he have a beard? I mean,
let's have a look at the picture.
Need to see the avatar.
He does have a beard.
That's good.
He's got a beard.
I mean,
and actually, in his picture, he's also wearing a cap and sunglasses. So I would say about 80% of all available face space is beard.
Okay. Oh, I'm looking at it now. It is. Yeah, it's quite a beard. It's Beardy McBeardface. Yes. Username checks out.
It's weird that would be his real name and he would also grow up to have such a lovely beard. Incredible coincidence.
Nominative determinism,
anyway,
yes.
At play, yes. He says, following Ozil's attempt at the weekend, what is your favourite Arsenal volley?
That's a good question. Oh, I know the answer.
Do you?
Yeah.
Straight away.
Yeah.
You sound sad, which makes me think
sound sad.
It's going to be a Robin Van Persie goal or something.
It's going to be Robin Van Persie against Charlton. Was it Charlton?
It was Charlton flying through the air. We scored some great goals at that ground, looking back.
Yeah. I mean, it's just an amazing goal. I'm trying to think of other Arsenal volleys that... There was one...
Match of Flamini against Spurs, where that ball dropped out the sky. Mm-hmm. He buried it from the long range. There was a couple of Lukas Podolski ones that were brilliant.
Kieran Gibbs, I think, scored one. A couple of those where Giroud like does the dinky thing over the top.
Yeah, they're similar goals, actually. That was Swansea, I think, that Gibbs scored that against.
Aaron Ramsey against Norwich? A couple of seasons back, and it's not dissimilar from the Mesut Ozil one in the sense that the cross comes over and he's moving backwards as he volleys it, then back across goal
into the
top
corner.
That was a great goal as well. I'm just trying to think of some others. I mean, there must be loads that I can't remember, but
those are some pretty good ones. That Van Persie one against Charlton's a pretty unique goal, isn't it? I mean, I can't think of two.
There was a Van Persie one against Everton. I'm sorry. Sorry for all this Van Persie talk, ladies and gentlemen.
He was
I do
good
apologize.
At volleying the ball.
But there was a Van Persie one against Everton where Song played a pass over the top. I think it was a 1-0 win. However, remember Eduardo, we just talked about him. Remember his goal against Burnley? He scored an amazing goal against Burnley in the.
The one off the heel, almost.
Yeah, the one off the heel. Does Thierry Henry's goal against Manchester United count as a volley, even if he clipped the ball up to himself? I'm not sure it does it?
I think it probably technically does, but it's not quite the same thing, is it? I mean, in that category, you've got Adebayor at White Hart Lane.
Yes.
That was a
cross
hit.
Yeah. But I think the Van... Oh! think about this one. Was it his first goal for Arsenal? Probably not his first goal, but I remember Alexis Sanchez scoring a really great volley against Manchester City. Do you remember that really weird game a couple of seasons ago? I think it was his first season, and he scored a volley, and we were winning 2-1, I think, until quite late on, and they equalized, and then they had about four chances in the last 5 minutes to score a winner. It was one of those goals where when you concede so late, you're always disappointed not to win, but because of what happened in the game, you were like, I'm quite relieved we didn't lose. But Alexis scored a great volley, one of his first goals for Arsenal, a kind of side-footed volley.
Oh, yes, yeah. I do remember it now. God, that really got away from me. I think it's an Aaron Ramsey clip ball.
Right.
I've got it playing now on the video.
Oh, really?
It's headed back into the box by Wilshere.
Right.
And it drops in it. Yeah, he dispatches it brilliantly, a volley into the far top corner. Side of the foot almost.
Mm.
Really nice goal.
Yeah. And there's probably loads more. There's probably loads more where, you know, because stuff happened before, we got countless replays and replays and replays and videos and YouTubes and finds and GIFs. There's millions more, obviously, that people will remind us of on Twitter, I'm sure, and say, how could you have forgotten that one? How could you forget that one? But yeah, those are the ones that spring to mind, yeah.
I love a volley. I love a volley. There's something about it, isn't there? I mean, I just think, they always feel pretty emphatic.
Yeah.
I enjoy that. But, I mean, yesterday's was right up there. I mean, it was just an astonishing piece of skill.
All right. Here is a question from a couple of people have sent this one in. At Rosser Gunner, who's at Rosser _ Gunner, who says, given his dreaminess and perfect hair, and now that he's learning under Pep and former Arsenal player, would you take a punt on Arteta to replace Wenger? And the same question comes from Rob Ashdown, who says, could you see Arteta taking the helm at Arsenal one day?
I think one day is definitely, you know, something to talk about, because he, you know, he had a real affinity for the club. For someone who arrived here relatively late, I think maybe the fact that it took him quite a long time to get back to that level after leaving Barcelona, you know, went via Rangers and Everton. I think he loved it, and I think he really appreciated the opportunity to play for a club like Arsenal. And I think he did so with distinction, certainly while he was fit, at any rate. I'd love to see it. I don't really think it's particularly realistic to put someone in to replace Arsene Wenger as their first job in management. But I can see the argument, the counter-argument of, well, kind of why not? You might as well give it a whirl, a fresh approach. I think if you were going to do that, you'd have to assemble a hell of a team around him. But
former Barcelona director of football and a Borussia Dortmund chief scout, that kind of a team.
Something, yeah, and maybe put his mate and vice captain in as head of the academy. And, you'd have to make a few big calls. But I don't know. What do you think?
It wouldn't surprise me at all, because because when you look at you know, think about 3 or 4 years ago. If you were to say Arsene Wenger is going to retire, who are the candidates that could take over? And you had Klopp, you had Conte, you had Guardiola, Mourinho, obviously not. But there were quite a number of coaches throughout Europe, Ancelotti maybe. There were coaches throughout Europe that you thought, okay, these guys have the ability to replace Wenger in terms of their quality as managers and coaches. And I think Klopp and Guardiola were the two guys I really thought would be good for Arsenal because of the way that they manage, because of the profile of the club. I thought those were the two guys. I mean, I think I really would have loved to have seen Arsenal under Pep Guardiola. Would have loved it. I think he was, you know, he is probably the best coach in the world. He is a bit mad. He's a bit mental, but I think that's part of who he is and how he does what he does. I think he could have got a lot out of some of the players that we have. But you know, that's water under the bridge. It's not going to happen at this point in City. You know, we can see what he's doing there. He's doing amazing work. But I would have loved to have seen him at Arsenal. And now, when I look across Europe, it's hard to see who the obvious candidates are. Right. There's nobody really banging down the door. There's nobody out there where you can say, oh, I want that guy. There was Thomas Tuchel, obviously at Dortmund, who was doing some good work, but ultimately didn't work out for him there. And you're thinking, well, maybe not. Maybe he's not that guy. And I think that the board will look around and decide, unless they can identify somebody who is working somewhere else at this moment in time. I know they were talking about, there was some links with the guy from Leipzig. What's his name? Hassan, whatever his name is. Hang on. I'm going to have to look it up. there was some talk about him. But I just don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me. Hassan Hüttl. I think that's how you pronounce it anyway. Ralf Hassan Hüttl.
Ralf Hüttl. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it strikes me that
in the English and German press.
Yeah, when it comes to what we're going to do, the idea of bringing somebody in who knows the club, who knows what it needs to do after Wenger, having been there under Wenger, is not a bad one. And I also think that maybe Gazidis will, rather than go out and say, right, this is A, established manager, or B, established manager, or C, established manager. That's what anybody could do. Any chief executive could go and get that guy, or that guy, and bring them in. I have a feeling that Gazidis will want to, like, absolutely shake off the chains of Wenger and say, look what I can do. Look at how adventurous and ambitious I am, and look at the ideas I have for this football club. It's a young guy. He's forward-thinking. He's played under Wenger. He's worked under Pep Guardiola, who's the best coach in the world at this moment in time. You know, and those are good qualities to have in a coach, perhaps, in a guy who's going to come in. That's good experience. I don't think that is as distant a possibility as you do.
Well, I'd be interested to see it. I mean, if we're not going to get Guardiola, so getting a guy who's worked under him, there's some merit to that.
Yeah.
And it is someone who understands the club and someone who I think would be prepared and would accept working in that kind of modern structure that we're setting up. Who knows? But his name will be mentioned as one of the candidates, I'm sure. Mm. I'm sure of that.
He's a smart guy. He's a very clever guy, Arteta. Thinks about the game a lot. I think that's something that Wenger said a few times, actually, before he was retiring in his final season. He was talking about Arteta and the way that he thinks about football and how focused he is and dedicated he is. And look, you know, you think about the experience that he's had in his career. You know, he grew up at Barcelona in that academy and in that system, and to learn how to play in that way. You know, maybe Walter Smith and David Moyes aren't the guys that you would point to as people who would be formative in terms of your coaching career. But to play for 5 years under Wenger, and regardless of what people think about Wenger now, players love working with him. They love it. Nobody ever says a bad word about him. Nobody who plays for him on a regular basis, I should say, has anything bad to say about him, and seems to think that what he does is exceptional in terms of how he treats people. And Guardiola is very different, obviously. He's a very deep thinker. He demands a lot from his players. He's very exacting. And if Arteta can take those two qualities, or those, you know, the experiences from those two men, and kind of mesh them into his own way of how he thinks about football and apply them to a coaching career, then fuck, maybe it could be a good thing. Who knows? In the absence of anything else or anything more obvious, I'd be happy enough to give that a go, just because it would be something different and interesting, and we'd be able to see if it works or not. Who knows? You know, I think we're going to have to accept that, you know, when Wenger goes, there could be a bit of hit and miss about what we do. This coach might not work and that coach might not work. It might take a while to find the right guy. So why not give him a go and see what he can do? And if he's the right guy straight away, fine. If he's not, move on, next guy.
Well, it would be a big gamble, but I think anything's going to be post-Wenger, as you've alluded to there.
Yeah.
Let's have another question, speaking about the future. This is from Ollie, who's at Ollie in Motion on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And Ollie says, after Saturday's game, is it not clear that Wilshere deserves a new contract with the club? If anything, just as an asset.
Yeah, I mean, this was something we talked about on the Arsecast on Friday with Rory Smith, that the idea that you couldn't sell Jack Wilshere for a good few million quid, regardless of how well he's been playing, is a ridiculous one. I think Wenger talked about wanting to be able to see he could cope with the demands physically. And obviously, he's got to stay fit. But I think he's done his chances in the last couple of weeks some good. You know, he is... Even if he's not going to be a starter week in, week out, I think Jack Wilshere as a squad player is a very good squad player. Like, ask yourself, you know, I think we've got work to do in central midfield, right? I don't think the players we have are good enough. I don't think the system is right. But, you know, let's assume that a new manager at some point comes in and sorts all that out. We still need an improvement of quality in central midfield. But would you prefer, as your backup squad player or a guy who's going to come in and play 20 games a season and some cup games and all that, would you prefer Jack Wilshere or would you prefer Elneny or Coquelin? And that's not to be disrespectful to those two guys. I just know what I would prefer, and it would be Jack Wilshere.
I mean, yeah, I think that's a good point. I'll be honest, I hold my hands up. I didn't think Jack Wilshere would be able to stay fit as long as he has this season. And maybe that's not a foolish thing of me to say, because he did it at Bournemouth for the majority of the season. He picked up that big injury in the spring, but until that, he was largely available. But I did not foresee him, you know, we're talking about a week in which he's played two 90-minute Premier League games. I did not foresee that happening. And obviously, look, we don't know how he's come through it. We don't know. This is a really testing period for him, this Christmas period, because there's game after game after game, and he's not had to do that yet. He's been playing, you know, one game a week max. But yeah, I guess there is, what, you know, give him a deal, because if you decide you don't want him, at least you recoup some money. The problem is, we're now at a point in time where that's not necessarily in his interests. If he decides I want to go and play every week somewhere, he might as well sit it out, you know, yeah, and go for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Wenger said. In fairness, he did talk about that. He said, you know, Jack has to be happy to stay here as well. And I think that the fact that he said that a couple of times makes me think that maybe Wilshere is thinking, I could go somewhere and I could be more important somewhere else than I'm going to be at Arsenal. But if it were up to me, I think, you know, I'd err on the side of keeping him at this point, you know, not to be the guy who's going to be the panacea to all our midfield problems, not to be the guy who's going to come in and make everything better, but as a guy who's got quality and who could be a really good squad player and be competitive, who could make midfield competitive, right?
Yeah.
Because midfield is not competitive right now.
No, and I think that he does offer you a legitimately different option. And I think that, you know, we're seeing his value now that Ramsey's out. And I didn't think it would go this way. I probably would have sanctioned the sale of Jack Wilshere last summer. But yeah, so I hold my hands up in that respect. And I think I probably would look to keep him. I'd certainly be in more of a hurry to offer him a deal than some of the other central midfielders that you mentioned. So, yeah.
Mm. Okay, here's a question from Ross Arbuthnot, who's, I probably mispronounced that, Ross, very sorry. But he says, he's at Rosso3589. He says, how do we stop Liverpool? I feel we need to adapt a similar approach to Chelsea away, but can't see Wenger playing this way at home.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, they are kind of the nightmare team, with the exception of Manchester City. They are kind of a nightmare team for us potentially, because they've got so much pace and so much ability to capitalize on any error. It just feels like their confidence is flowing through them going forward at the moment, and the attacking talent they have is something to envy. How do we stop them? I think we do probably have to be a bit more conservative, especially because I don't think we look like we could take them on, you know, in a shootout at the moment. We're just not good enough going forward to go toe-to-toe with them and say, well, you score three and we'll score four. I don't think we've got that in our locker right now.
But do you not think we've got the players capable of doing that, in the sense that we've got Ozil, we've got Lacazette, we've got Alexis, that maybe he will view these attacking talents as the best way to... to negate Liverpool in a way that, like, let's face it, defensively, they're not great either. Like, both teams are stronger from an attacking point of view than they are from a defensive point of view. The issue that we have, obviously, is A, we're not scoring a lot at the moment, and B, Liverpool are, and they've got the best player in the league.
Yeah, I mean, that is a big issue. As good as Mesut Ozil's been in recent weeks, I don't feel like our front three look like they're about to take on Liverpool's and win. However, I didn't feel like that necessarily right on the eve of the Spurs game.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
If they turn up, if it clicks, it's possible. I mean, one thing I would say is I feel like we will go into that game with a back four. I think.
Do you think?
I think the change has been made.
I was just thinking that with Mustafi back, I do wonder if we might go for the back three against Liverpool because of the need to be a bit more defensively secure.
Do you? Mm. I mean, that option is there. That option is
because
there.
I mean, the same team that he put out against Spurs, I think he might put out against Liverpool. Well, obviously, without Ramsey, is how you replace Ramsey. But
I suppose that option is available. I wonder if you go, if you put Mustafi in alongside Koscielny, and you go with
I'd be all right with
left back,
as well.
A left back.
Yeah, could be. Yeah,
and I mean, do like the idea of if you do have to replace Ramsey. I know Wilshere's been doing okay, but I'm intrigued by this idea of, you know, do you put Ainsley Maitland-Niles into your central midfield for that game just to give you someone with that recovery pace?
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like he would be, in terms of the players that we've got in the squad, he does look like perhaps the most Ramsey like-for-like player that we have. And, of course, that's bearing in mind that we're ascribing qualities and abilities to Maitland-Niles that we're basing off, you know, some Europa League games and two games in the Premier League. I don't want to sort of hype this kid up to be the answer to midfield either, but just in terms of what he can do and how he can do it, maybe that would be the way. I mean, the issue is, like, if you go to a back three, then you weaken yourself in midfield.
Yeah.
You've got that too, which is not, you know, without Ramsey, it doesn't always function, Ramsey and Xhaka, but Wenger seems to have some trust in that. I don't think he trusts what Xhaka plus anyone else. That would be my thinking on that. So I don't know. I think we've just got to try and do, in terms of the performance and in terms of how we play, in terms of how we press and in terms of how we put pressure on the opponent, we've got to try and do something similar to what we did against Spurs.
Yeah, well, that option hopefully will be available. Is Mustafi, is he due to be back?
Well, he's back in training. He was back in training and before the Newcastle game, but wasn't risked.
Right.
I can't see him playing in the Carabao Cup, so he should be back in contention at least.
I think it'll be Holding and Chambers in the Carabao, I should think.
Probably. Holding's not even making the bench in the Premier League. It's
I know.
Yeah.
Quite remarkable, really.
Yeah, sure is.
Should we have another question?
Yeah, go on. Let's have a couple of quick ones to finish off.
Okay, quick one. All right, this is from Limaro Fipama on Twitter. And Limaro says, hindsight is a great thing, but we really should have sold Sanchez, shouldn't we?
Should we?
Not really a quick one, is it?
It's not really a quick one. Look, if we were going to sell Sanchez, we should have sold him early in the summer and then used the money to get a replacement. As soon as you made the decision to hold on to him, then you've got to go with it. You've got to ride that out. Like, he hasn't been great, but then that's true of many others. I don't think he's been, you know, I don't understand the need to start hating on Alexis Sanchez because he isn't scoring as many goals as he did last season. I just don't quite get it. He's frustrating as a player, but he's always been frustrating. He's wasteful, but he's always been wasteful. And it's because he's in the last year of his contract that the perception or the what would you say, people's willingness to put up with those things has changed as well. You know, if you were clever, yeah, you sell him last summer. He could have gone into Manchester City, fucked things up completely by playing the way he is at the moment. And yeah, look, I don't even see the point of this discussion really at this point. We made the decision. We have to live with the decision. You know, if we'd sold him, it would have been same old Arsenal. You're selling your best player. Can't hold on to anyone. You're not willing to sacrifice money for football or for football reasons. And we did that this time. We sacrificed money, a lot of money, I'm sure, for a decision or, you know, for a player who we thought could still make a contribution to us on the pitch. Mm. It hasn't gone quite as well as we would have liked, but then that's true of this season in general, right? And I don't think all our problems are down to Alexis Sanchez not scoring. I just don't think that's the case. So I don't see him. He's become a bit of a lightning rod in terms of criticism and everything else. But yeah,
I mean, look, Mesut Ozil's not playing like it being in the final year of his contract is a problem, I would say.
Mm.
And so it's fair to assume that Alexis might have produced in the same way. And if he was playing anything close to like he was last season. None of us would be questioning the decision. It was a gamble from Arsene Wenger. It seems to be paying off as far as Ozil goes. Less so. Less so with Sanchez.
Mm.
By the way, I should say that all evening on Twitter, I've seen people saying that they expected an announcement about Mesut Ozil's contract.
Yeah, what's going
made.
On
Did
there?
You follow this?
No, I just saw some people mentioning it on Twitter. What's happening?
Well, it's Sunday night. I think what happened was, well, first of all, it's Sunday night and everyone's a bit of a loose end. But I also think Arsenal put out a tweet saying something like, it's a wet afternoon in North London, so let us brighten up your Sunday. And everyone thought, hang on, they're going to give us some good news here. And it transpired that they then were just tweeting Ozil's best goals for Arsenal, little video clips of Ozil's best goals. But even that was sort of fuel for the fire. Mm. People were like, well, this is going somewhere. You know, if they're celebrating Ozil so publicly, they must have something good to tell us imminently. Mm. But
They could be just after cheap retweets as well.
Well, could be. What I will say is if there is going to be some good news, I doubt it's going to be on a Sunday evening. That would be an unusual time.
Yeah, that would be strange. That would be strange. Okay, final question. This comes from, fuck. Oh, why did I do this?
That's an unusual name.
fuck. Yeah, fuck O'Toole. He's from County Offaly. Now, this comes from Sayahideru. I've got that really wrong, but it's on Facebook. And I apologize for mangling your name, but it's difficult for me to look at, especially after this glass of wine. It was a big glass of wine. He says, as much as I hate to witness it, if Man City does the unthinkable and becomes the new Invincibles, how would you feel as an Arsenal fan? Would you congratulate them?
Congratulate them? I mean, I'm not really in the habit of congratulating anybody on winning the title that's not us.
Mm.
I would feel sad, actually. Look, I think, you know, for a club who hasn't won the European Cup, that is a really special and unique achievement. Mm. It's something quite extraordinary. I was even a bit annoyed when Celtic, you know, beat the British record or whatever it was for unbeaten games. I know that it's Scottish football and they lost that actually this very weekend. But
69 undefeated.
Yeah, exactly. Delighted. They must be delighted that it scanned so well, the number
yes.
that they lost. But I would feel really gutted. And it's something that sort of makes Arsene Wenger unique, that makes that team unique. And obviously, the achievement will still stand whatever happens, but I'd love it to remain as kind of special as it does. I will be honest and say, I don't think I've ever feared a team might emulate that feat like I do with this Man City team.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I obviously would prefer that they didn't. It would be annoying. I mean, we always have the, we did it first. Rebuttal.
Of course.
You know,
of course.
Yeah, of course you did it, but you know, we did it ages ago. And we did it.
Yeah.
I would prefer that they didn't. Would I congratulate them? No. I'm not into being magnanimous in that way.
I think they'll be okay with that, to be honest.
Yeah. I
don't think Pep's waiting for our call.
Yeah. It was a great achievement, but we did not get a call from the Arscast. It was
very nice accent.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Look, we've still to play them, you know, on our own.
Exactly.
It's very much in our hands, guys. You know, we've just, all we've got to do is beat Man City. It should be straightforward.
When is that game, I wonder? I'm just going to look it up now.
That's a great shout, because it's, you know, it might feel pretty significant, not in terms of the league table. That ship will have been long since sailed. But
yeah, that's done. February 24th. February 24th.
Might move. It's currently scheduled for 3 p.m. on the 24th. But yeah, that might move, mightn't it?
It might move. But yeah, look, you know, if somebody goes through a whole season unbeaten, you kind of have to in some way doff your cap to that, because, you know, it's so rare and so unbelievably difficult, and you've got to have all those things come together, right? You've got to have the quality, you've got to have those bits of luck along the way. But like you say, we've got a chance to make sure that it doesn't happen at our place. So, yeah, let's. I would prefer that we put an end to it than they did it, obviously. So,
And what a thing it would be to be the team who beats them. You know, that would be great.
Alexis Sanchez's own goal gives Arsenal a 1-0 win. How about that?
Yeah, horrible feeling. He might still be playing for us, but you still score the own goal.
Oh, no, let's not go there. All right, well, look, we're going to leave it there. It's a strange week this week. We play on Friday night. We play Tuesday, obviously, in the Carabao Cup. We play Friday night against Liverpool. So I'll be here later in the week. We'll have a podcast with the Mug Smasher talking about Liverpool and all that kind of crack. And I don't know what's going to happen next week, because next Monday is Christmas Day. So we won't be doing a podcast on Christmas Day.
And we don't play on Boxing Day, which is unusual.
No,
do we
play on the 28th, I think. So what if we do one on, but then we play on the 30th as well. Anyway, maybe we should chat.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. We'll get something together.
Send
at some
in
point,
your suggestions, guys. Yeah.
It's either the 26th or the 27th, James. One or the other. Okay. Or the 29th. Lovely. Or the 30th. Okay. We play in the 30th. There's no point. But yeah, we will figure that out off air, and we'll have a podcast for you at some point during that week. Until then, take it easy. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.